You're listening to Trade Entrepreneur, the show for business owners by business owners. I'm your host, David Sudworth, and welcome to this week's show. Thanks once again for tuning in to Trade Entrepreneur podcast. We're on the second part of a two-part theme regarding a book that was probably one of my favourite business books by James Watt, who's the co-founder of Brewdog Beers, and it's called Business for Punks. Last week, we went through a few of the chapters, which are among my most favourites. And this week, we're going to do the remaining ones. Like I said, this book is published by Penguin Business. It's £9.99. I was lucky enough to find it in a charity shop, so I didn't obviously pay that much money for it. But it was well worth it, and certainly would have been worth it, even if I'd ever had to pay the full amount, because, like I said last week, it's just a really easy book to read. You can dip in and out of it when you want. You can it's very compact. You don't have to. It's not very heavy on text. And also, the good thing about it is that it's very, very easy to read. And those are three things which are music to my ears. So we'll dive right into this week's favorite parts of the book for me. This first bit is actually kind of gone into three bits. It's the section D of the book. It's sales for postmodern apocalyptic punks. And he says there's only three very simple things you need to know about sales. Number one, focus on your product. Number two, be open and honest. And number three, don't compete on price. So on focus on product, he says, you need to create a product or service that is so compelling and brilliant your customers and potential customers actively seek it out. Don't push, create pull. Push is dead. Start creating some real pulling power. For us, certainly, we're more obviously in the service side of it rather than the product side. But if you think about things like Apple, they certainly, there is a pull element there that they have created a product which is, every time a new version comes out, there's so many people just clamor for it. That is a good example of a product based pull rather than the push. For us, as a chimney sweeping, inspecting and testing company, obviously our thing is service. So we go heavy on customer service, and we find that being really hot on good customer service is the thing that keeps people coming back to us time and time again. It also attracts new people, because at the end of the day, one of the big things about trades companies is that they're usually appalling at communication, and we're very good at communication. We hone it. We're in constant contact with our customers, and customers know it's easy to get hold of us. There's a dedicated phone lines with office staff who are ready to take the call. We have email and text reminders, and you know, you can pay by card. It's just so easy. We are service. I always say to our staff and anyone who will listen, we are not a chimney sweeping company. We are a customer service company first. A customer service company that provides chimney sweeping services. If you can be the best chimney sweeping company in the world, but if your customer service is dreadful or not very good, then quite frankly, people overtake you. So that's the way we look at that. In terms of being open and honest, James says, build a customer base on trust. Create a mutually beneficial community and make them feel part of it. Winning together is much more compelling proposition than winning alone. I think it's easier really with a product rather than a service to do this, to be honest. And I get what he's talking about. You know, the community, the craft ale community, for instance. I can certainly see that. I can certainly see it in terms of Apple or, you know, computer games or product. I think it's quite difficult with a service. I can probably maybe think of the likes of Ocado and things like that, but in terms of service, I think it's something that I need to look into a bit more, to be perfectly honest with you, because I think obviously what we do is obviously based on trust, and it's mutually beneficial to us to create good customer services, because it means a smoother journey for the customer, and they'll then come back to us time and time again. And we feel that if we're happy, if the customer's happy, and if the customer's happy, then we're happy. So it's a mutually beneficial thing. I think it's pretty much an intangible. I might come back to this subject actually, because it's not one I've particularly thought of too deeply. I think, like I say, it is easy with products rather than services, but maybe we'll come back to that one at some point. The final one I definitely agree with: don't compete on price. James says that undercutting the competition is a fast track to a real kicking. The only thing you'll end up cutting is your own business's throat. Stand firm on price and walk away from any two-bit hustlers. And he says, so this ends the shortest section in this book. Don't worry too much about sales. Sales are merely the byproduct of being great elsewhere. Just going back to price, it's no secret that we put our prices on our website, and it's also no secret that there are many, many chimney sweeping companies in the area and in the country at large that don't charge as much as we do, but we stand firm on price because we believe we have an excellent customer service, and people come back to us time and time again because of that. And because of that, we feel that it's the prices we charge are more than justified. And we do stand firm on price. I mean, like I say, these days I don't answer the phone to customers' initial inquiries. So I always ask for feedback, and sometimes we get a bit of pushback on price. But that's fine, because there's other companies out there that maybe be a better fit for that customer. At the end of the day, it needs to be a two-way thing. You can't just have the company calling all the shots, and you can't just have the customer calling all the shots. It needs to be a relationship, a conversation, a two-way thing, because if it isn't, then it's an imbalanced relationship will at some point fracture. That's the case in relationships in your personal life, and it's certainly the case in business as well. So we've never competed on price at all. I think there's obviously major examples in the world of companies which compete on price, particularly supermarkets. I think that's slightly different, because I think you could, that is to do with products rather than services. And if you look at the service element of supermarkets, it's wildly different. You know, if you go to the likes of Aldi, and you literally push through the queue as quickly as possible and literally have your stuff thrown at you, because they have to make their money somewhere, and they try to process people as quickly as possible. You go to somewhere like Waitrose, where it's obviously a lot more expensive than Aldi, but the experience is different. The stores are bigger. It's probably a bit more of a less enclosed environment. You're not kind of stepping over people who are stacking shelves at the same time, and you don't feel like you're being rushed down to the store. So there's always a trade-off somewhere when it comes to price. So even in this very difficult times economically, there are still some companies that just do not compete on price. And I always say to business owners, if you do try to compete on price, there'll always be someone cheaper than you at some point, and at some point you will not be the cheapest. And it's a race to the bottom. It just really is. I just certainly wouldn't go there. Again, that's a subject for another podcast. But I'm very much an advocate for not cutting your nose off to spite your face in terms of price. Yes, you want customers, but you want them on both your terms, not just the customer's terms in terms of price. If the customer, if their sticking point is price, then you just have to say, well, okay, we're not the company for you. I'm sorry. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that's just the way it goes sometimes. So, yeah, don't compete on price. That's James's advice, and it's certainly my advice. The next chapter, which I like, is Get Forgiveness, Not Permission. Read you a bit of this. James says, "To hell with permission. Absolve your sins with forgiveness. We run our business and lives by this mantra. You should take it for a test drive. There is no warranty, but I guarantee it'll be the best one you'll ever have. We didn't get permission to use an image of Vladimir Putin on our labels. This was clearly well before the invasion of Ukraine. We did not get permission to drive a tank through the streets of central London, and we did not get permission to project a 150-foot high image of Martin and myself naked on the Houses of Parliament. We did not get permission to parachute taxidermic cats out of a helicopter over London, but we did all these things anyway, and we only almost got arrested twice. Put your conscience and morals in a drawer, lock it, throw away the key and join the revolution, because at a certain point you'll have to do things you know you shouldn't. We certainly did. By doing so, we were able to grow our business, employ more people and contribute much more to the economy. If a two-bit penny-pushing bureaucratic monkey is going to mess with you, particularly when you're trying to kickstart your local economy and employ people, just hang them out to dry. Now, he does say, and this bit is very important, and this is why it's always important to read things to the end. He says, there is, however, a subtlety here. This strategy is not quite as risky and reckless as it sounds. I'm not advocating gung-ho, uncontrolled lawlessness for the sake of it. You need to know how to play the game, what the rules are, and how to break... You need to understand what the rules are to ever consider breaking them. You need to know precisely which rules you can break and which rules you can't. The time to get forgiveness rather than permission is when the consequences of not getting permission are far worse than the consequences for your business of not taking immediate action, or when you believe you'll be able to game face it up and dodge the consequences. Not asking for permission is not just a business strategy, but also a way of life. It's not about abusing situations, but knowing when to push boundaries. It's about realizing that the overwhelming number of people in life are naysayers, and sometimes you just got to roll the dice and say to hell with the consequences. Don't let stuffy bureaucratic zombies in cheap suits rule your world. I mean, that last bit is really important. It's not about just being completely reckless. It's about knowing how far you can push things. I think one of the things that a lot of people don't understand in business is the things that they might publish either in their own literature or on social media, their social media platforms, because luckily we've got background in legal training, and so we know what we can and can't publish, and we know how far we can push things, and you know, that's very, very important. You should never ever you see some stuff printing thinking, blinking at that is well over the mark, that and sometimes they get taken down, and sometimes they don't, and sometimes they very much should be. But there is always a fine line, and I think it depends what the subject matter is. But I would certainly you need to understand the rules of any game, and I think in the game of business, you need to understand the parameters which you're working in, because if you don't, the issue is that you might not be pushing forward as fast as you can, and as well as you can. By the same token, if you push forward and you don't know the rules, then you really can come unstuck. I know there was regular listeners will know that I publish blogs, and sometimes I get comments from people saying, oh, you'll get a complaint about that and stuff, or, oh, I'd expect a solicitor's letter from that. And they're usually from people who haven't got a clue what they're talking about, because the article is completely based on fact. And the funny thing is about fact is that if you have fact on your side, then everything else is just chaff. Yes, you might get people complaining about it, but if they complain about the truth, then, well, that's a bit tough, isn't it, really? So I know there's one particular article which I've written probably over a year ago now, and it was about stove installations, and people seem to think that you need to be Heatass approved to install a stove. Obviously, we had Bruce on the show a few weeks ago. Great conversations, very enjoyable. But even Bruce himself said that during the interview, there are more competent person schemes than than HETAS. And there are. So it's a myth that you need a HETAS certificate when you have a stove installed. It does need to be signed off on the building regulations in England, but in terms of who can do that sign off, then it does vary. It certainly doesn't have to be a HETAS. But we actually got a comment from someone saying, I'd be careful about you. You'd probably get a solicitor's letter from that. Well, we didn't. And even if we had, it would have just written back and said, I'm sorry, this article is based fully on fact and we stand by it. End of story. So, but that's because we had firm foundations. We knew what we were doing. If we didn't know what we were doing, then we could have gone too far. And then that may have caused serious problems. So you need to understand, like I said, you need to understand the rules of the game. And sometimes that involves taking advice from people who have more experience in certain things than you do. So it's always a good thing to think twice before you push the envelope slightly. But and take that advice from people who actually know what they're talking about, not just people who just got an opinion. An opinion is fine as long as it's a knowledgeable opinion. If it isn't, then it's pretty much a waste of time. The next chapter, avoid committee rule. James says, committees are absolutely lethal, both to the now murdered fledgling concept and to the sanity of everyone involved. They are the antithesis of the creative process. A brainstorming party is for the brain dead. Collaboration is for those with no ideas, desperately trying to magic up some half-baked nonsense from thin air. Save yourself some time and energy and disband the committee before it's formed. Like all things in life, the best ideas start small. They are born of the central vision of individuals or small and long-standing tight-knit teams, teams that are an extension of you rather than an addition to you. Then you can fine-tune your V8 until the tailpipes sing and burn blue. Once you have a concept tuned, locked and loaded and ready to roll, you can look to use small teams to implement and realize this vision. Individual vision is always the force behind truly remarkable ideas and concepts, and that goes across the board from the top down and back up again. Committees are to ideas what kryptonite is to Superman. As someone who liked Superman when he was a kid, I like the reference to kryptonite. Kryptonite was clearly the chemical compound which could kill Superman. So I quite like that. Ideas are fragile. They need to be massaged until they purr. They do not need to be bastardized and overcomplicated by a meeting room full of Muppets. Yeah, committees. It's funny, actually, because it kind of goes contrary to what I've just said about getting advice from people. But then again, I think, you know, there's an old saying that too many cooks can spoil the broth, and I think that's true. And you need to have firm leadership. If you are going to have a team, then they need to be pretty much on board. And if they're not, then you need to think very carefully about how you take that forward. Do they have justified advice? Do they have knowledgeable advice? Do they have advice about stuff that you really don't have a clue about? If so, listen to them. But people just shooting the breeze and saying, well, I don't like this and I don't like that, that's completely pointless. I mean, in industry, particularly in industry politics, I see so many committees and I just think this is a complete waste of time. And consequently, I haven't really got much time for committees. You very rarely see anything of note which comes out of committee discussion. It might be that someone's introduced something and it gets approved by the committee X or Y or whatever, but it's really good ideas are usually brought to the table rather than formulated at the table. And if they are formulated at the table, it's usually the same person bringing up the idea time and time again. So yeah, a committee, there is a difference between having a good team and taking good advice. Having a committee just evokes visions of men in grey suits basically just talking for the sake of it. And yeah, I'm not really I'm not really a fan of that. I think sharp, decisive action is what's needed. And I think if you're a leader in a company, then you need to lead from the front. And if you do hide behind committees, quite frankly, you're absolving your responsibilities and you're kind of ducking things. So my advice really is if you are a leader, then do the thing that you're meant to do and actually lead. The final part of this is actually the conclusion of the book. And this is quite an interesting insight, really, because he says, the conclusion, it is all a game. And it starts with a quote from Steve Jobs, who is described as a business punk. He's also the, obviously, the, is he the co-founder or the founder of Apple? Steve Jobs says, if you're not passionate enough from the start, you'll never stick it out. It goes back to James. Through filth, fury, and originality, the old school punks changed the world of music. And now there is an opportunity for a whole new generation of punks to change the world of business. Punk marked the dawning of the age of the individual. Now, more than ever, businesses need to be brave enough to stand out through rebellion and anarchy and have the guts to be individual too. At the heart of the punk ethos is the Dada tenet, and I'm not sure what that means, of elevating everything to an art form. You need to elevate everyday business things to an art form as you look to join the new wave of revolutionaries who are redefining the commercial landscape. Business is no longer about overqualified, suited bigwigs in stuffy boardrooms. It's about ordinary people having the guts to do extraordinary things. Forget the old. Burn the establishment, create a new world order, make damn sure your passion and your mission align and simultaneously collide. Make sure your passion underpins every facet of your enterprise. Every decision must be forged with passion and purpose, edging you ever closer to achieving your crusade. Ignore advice, burn market research, laugh in the face of naysayers and doubters, mock your critics and haters. Don't live your dreams through someone else. Don't make other people's mistakes, and don't let people who don't care or understand influence your decisions. That's a great way to end the book, because in a way it kind of just encapsulates everything which is about entrepreneurship, particularly, I was going to say business then, but it's actually entrepreneurship, because as we've explored in previous podcasts, there's a massive difference between the two. I think, you know, in terms of myself, funnily enough, I like punk music. I wouldn't say I'm a massive punk fan, but I like the do-it-yourself kind of sod everyone else approach, because in business you have to do that, and if you don't do that, you'll end up being the same as everyone else. I mean, I know Richard Branson gets some stick these days, but quite frankly, he was one of those who was sticking it to everyone and doing things which, I mean, funnily enough, they signed the Sex Pistols, the pretty much the original punk band, to his record label when others wouldn't touch them with a barge pole. So you do have to make big decisions. And I think there's almost like I don't know if it's a British thing or not, but it's kind of like we like things to be understated. And obviously this way of doing things is a bit in your face. But I think, you know, to be in business, you have to stand out. You have to be out there. I think most people, particularly in trades, just don't want to draw too much attention to themselves, don't want to stick their head above the parapet, and are quite shy about it because they're frightened of getting mocked, ridiculed, or getting hated on by others. But, you know, if you want to be true to yourself, sometimes you're just going to have to ride that, unfortunately. Something that we've had to ride, and you know what? It's just making us stronger and stronger. So, yeah, as he says on the back of the book, don't waste your time on business plans. Forget sales. Ignore advice. Put everything on the line for what you believe in. Please, God, do that. Because and this is me talking now, please, God, do that. Because that's the bit that will make your business a success. And more importantly, you'll actually feel that you have personally achieved something. There's no point doing this if you don't actually get some actual satisfaction personally out of it. Business is hard. entrepreneurship is hard, so you have to enjoy it while you can. There's an old saying that if you do what you enjoy, then you'll never work another day again. I mean, some days it does feel like work, trust me, especially in the depths of winter for chimney sweeping. They are long hours and there's some very dirty chimneys that need tackling, but we do them. So yeah, I think it's an excellent book. I think it's every time I read it, I get re-inspired by it, and I just think that it's something which it strikes a chord with me. So if you have that particular mindset, pick it up, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it too. So thanks for joining me once again on Trade Entrepreneur Podcast. You can drop me an email with your comments. It's david@trade-entrepreneur.co.uk. We're on Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, and if you subscribe to whichever channel you listen to this on, it'll give you an alert when the next show is available. So thanks once again for joining me on Trade Entrepreneur. Have a great week. Don't work too hard, and we'll see you all again very soon.